This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 123, recorded live Sunday, April the 3rd, 2016. Today, CJ and I are going to do a build recap and some takeaways that we have from the Microsoft Build Conference this past week.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ValidNL. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, Business Intelligence and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on valid.nl.
Good day, CJ. How are you?
Pretty good, mate. Pretty good. Where are you?
I'm in Las Vegas. I am here for a short little two-day business conference. I did it 2 years ago. Absolutely loved it. Skipped it last year. Coming back this year, it does a really good like motivation, getting on a bunch of stuff and everything. And yeah, so I'm here just for 2 days. It's interesting because it's in Vegas for business with pretty much a ton of people I don't know. So it's an interesting experience coming to Vegas. I guess you can call it solo, where you don't really know many people that are here. And so it's like the party desire and the gambling desire and all that stuff is just not there. So
you're telling us you miss us, don't you?
I do. Yeah. I do. That and like just seen a bunch of your friends like at a conference together last week, and then I build, but you're not there and afar. And so yeah, I miss you.
Yeah.
I have a very fun trip planned actually for the end of this week. I'm actually immediately following this Vegas trip, and you're very familiar with it.
Oh, yes, I am indeed. And I am so excited for you.
So I know we talked about a couple episodes ago that you spent 2 days, you applied and got accepted to the NASA social media program, where you get basically 48 hours of behind the scenes and special access and like a private tour with a handful of people. Leading up to a launch. And I applied to the next one the day that you were doing yours, and I got accepted. And so
woohoo.
This week, it's going to be painful, a bit painful, because I fly straight from Vegas on Wednesday night back to home, which is Jacksonville, Florida, and have to drive that night 2.5 hours south to Cape Canaveral because I got to be at the press office at 7 a.m. the next morning. So it'll be fun jumping in a car around midnight and driving 2.5 hours south.
It's totally worth it.
Oh, yeah. So SpaceX is putting up a commercial resupply, one of their Dragon capsules, sending it to the space station on Friday. So I'll get to see that and take a bunch of pictures. And definitely we'll have a blog post written up. So by the time this episode goes live, well, it wouldn't have happened yet. I'll be doing it in the next 2 days. So watch my blog for the following weekend or so to see a recap of it.
You are going to have such a great time. I was just blown away, and it was just a blur of 2 days of looking at stuff, and it was incredible. So we'll definitely have to have a bit of a geek out on the show about this.
Oh, absolutely. After we both do it. Yeah, it'd be a fun little geek out, go a little off topic here. This one, I'm crossing my fingers. So this one currently is set for, they're going to attempt a drone ship landing of the first stage of the Falcon 9 rocket, but they've applied for clearance, and they apparently are trying to get it set up to where they could do what's called an RTLS. So their second attempt to land the rocket back on land. And man, being that close to being within 2 miles of the launch and being able to get video and pictures of that would be epic.
Would be pretty sweet. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just wondering if they will have a different vantage point. If it comes back as a return to landing site, then they may want you somewhere different. But anyway, we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? But so what are you up to? What have you been since we last talked?
Well, I am back from Build. I'm back in sunny Washington. And just sort of recovering, really. Yeah, trying to get back on top of things and getting ready for the work week ahead. But it was a great trip, and saw a bunch of the folks I used to work with, obviously, at Microsoft and things, and had a great event. So it was definitely worth it. Good couple of days of information ingestion and catching up on all the latest bits and bobs that they're up to.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Well, hey, so today what we wanted to do in this episode was we wanted to look back at Build, and we did the two little recaps of the keynotes, but we've seen a little bit more news from the whole show, a little bit more news from the last day that came out. So we wanted to recap a little bit of news, and then we kind of wanted to take a minute and just kind of see what, share with everybody what our thoughts were, our big takeaways, or our thoughts were of the conference, because this is a really, this is Microsoft's big dev show for the year, and cloud is a big thing. So figure we recap it. So let's kick off with a little bit of news here. And I've got a few things in front of me here. One of them I thought was a good kind of dovetail off the announcement that happened on the second day of the keynote out with Xamarin. And this, it's kind of, it's obvious, but what I saw in news was that the Mono framework, which is essentially the OS X or the cross-platform version of .NET, has been relicensed under the MIT license and has been essentially handed over to the .NET Foundation, which, not surprising, because that was straight one of Miguel's, who's the main guy behind Xamarin, and now he's joined Microsoft. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is like a bunch of really great guys, great products, and it's going to be a very nice addition to the Microsoft stable.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what do you do? You want to grab a couple things and tell us a little bit of news that you saw that you want to share? And
yeah, no, absolutely. So, one of the ones that I saw was Microsoft are launching cognitive services based on Project Oxford and Bing. So, if you weren't familiar with Project Oxford, there were a set of APIs in the past that let you do things like, you know, face detection and happy or sad, and how it was the APIs that were based on the, you know, how old are you, sort of thing that went viral from Microsoft a little while ago. Anyway, so it's all been wrapped up under this thing called cognitive services. And it's a, basically it's an amalgamation of, they're saying, 22 different APIs that let you do all sorts of things. And there's a couple of bots that are based on this, and it does interesting things. So it's, I think it's called, there's a bot called Project Murphy. So you can ask it, you know, what would I look like if I was the Mona Lisa? And it'll sort of do this weird superimposing and mashup of you and the Mona Lisa, for example. But there's a bunch of APIs in there you could use to do different things. They've come out with pricing for them and APIs that you can call these sort of algorithms and things like that. There was a really cool, they brought a guy out on stage who was blind, I believe. I need to go rewatch the video exactly, but had a really interesting example of the use of these APIs, these face APIs, speech APIs, and recognition. They call it Custom Recognition Intelligence Service, which is CRIS, I think is what it's called. Some of which are in preview and others which are in these cognitive services. So yeah, I thought it was a pretty sweet set of APIs. I got to check it out and play with them. I haven't used them myself yet, but it's the stuff that used to power the how old do you look apps and things like that. So it'll be fun to try out.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. That sounds really interesting. I saw the cognitive services stuff seemed to have a pretty strong theme at Build this week with all the bots and everything and the intelligence stuff.
Yeah, that certainly seems to have been a big, what's the right word here, like theme of the event was bots, 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 right? I'm yet to figure out why, but that seems to be the that seems to be the theme of the event. There were a lot of bots for everything. So
I'm glad you said it like that, because it definitely, I saw the same, and this is not meant to be a slight, but it sure kind of felt like it was out of left field. It felt strange. Like this cognitive services and this whole bot thing just kind of seemed like, where did it come from? Like it was just been this like Skull and Corpse project, but all of a sudden it's like, all right, now we can talk about it. But it didn't seem like, I don't really understand how it ties into everything. I can see how they're trying to tie it into everything, but not being critical of it, but just, I don't really understand it just yet.
Yeah. This ongoing theme that Microsoft's had about building not only access to your data, you know, APIs to get access to your data, but also providing intelligence over the top of that stuff. And so the cognitive services piece, and, you know, flows into that, giving you intelligence over different types of data. And I think the best way that they've found to show that is by building bots, right, that can respond to you and do different things for you. So things like they've got APIs that power those bots, which they're using to demonstrate the sort of intelligent API surface that they're providing. And so there's things like computer vision, face recognition, there's some video things, speech recognition, you know, there's a bunch that is powered by Bing, like linguistic analysis, things like that that power the stuff. So I don't know, I think it's just the best way of showing these intelligent APIs at work.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. What else you got?
So I saw a couple Azure things. Some of them are, let me just knock through some of these pretty quick here. I saw that as far as Azure storage goes, there were two things. So one was they are now doing a preview of something called Storage Service Encryption at Rest.
Yes, I saw this too.
Yeah, so you can now say that the data or the data that you have in your Azure blobs, when it's stored, it can all be encrypted. So data encrypted at rest, which is a big deal for a lot of companies. For those that are in the know on this, they're using the AES 256 level encryption. They also did a nice update to the cross-platform Storage Explorer utility. What I like about this is that now it's got a check for updates bit. But the cool thing too about this one is that now if you're using Azure Table Storage, you can actually right-click and export a table as a CSV straight from this little utility, which is really cool. I wish they would do the same thing for the logs, but yeah, it's really slick. I saw some other stuff too, a little bit more detail around the DocumentDB pricing update. So we talked a little bit about that earlier in our one of our last recap episodes. With this one, you're going to be able to, in the past, you would just buy like different levels, which would be an amount of storage for your collection. And that would come with a certain number of, I can't remember what it was called, but it's like a processing unit. And now they actually give you a way to kind of independently do those. So you can say, you can purchase reserved throughput in storage independently. And the index storage is billed based on the gigabytes stored per hour. And then you can also have throughput billed based on the level reserved on an hourly basis. So you can now buy things, both how much you're storing in DocumentDB and then how much you're using it. You can now pay for those things in different independently. So if you have a read-only or write-only kind of a system, or one where you just have a lot of data that you want to do in a NoSQL type storage, you can, you know, you don't have to sit there and, you know, get the, if you have a lot of data that you don't read as often, you don't need as many of those processing units on. You're not kind of forced to buy it into a certain level. One other just little footnote here is that they also introduced a new massive virtual machine size. It's called the D15 V2 size.
Ooh.
20 cores, 114 gigs of memory, 1 terabyte storage. This is going to come out to, now I'm pricing based on the East US data center, $2.64 per hour. That comes out to about almost just shy of $2,000 a month.
Holy smoke. Do they indicate like why? Like what workloads would be good for this?
They didn't say what workloads, but this is one of the more, you know, with the 1 terabyte of local storage and the, you know, ton, you know, 20 cores and 114 gigs. I mean, this would be, you know, absolutely fantastic for, you know, a massive SQL box that you'd want to use if you want to do just like, you know, even if it's just temporary style work that you want to get done, where you just fire this guy up and you just go crazy with it for, you know, maybe just a couple hours or something like that, instead of having to go through and maintain this box. Because I mean, let's face it, buying that and having it on-prem, that's a pretty substantial investment. But running it, you know, 24/7, that too, obviously at $2,000 a month is going to be quite a big investment as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. Wow, that's a monster machine.
Yeah. And then the last thing I'll give you on Azure that I saw was I did watch on my flight out here to Vegas, I did get to download and watch a handful of the sessions. One of the ones I watched, highly recommended, is one by Vittorio, who's the Azure AD and identity guy for Microsoft. He talked a lot about it. I think the name of the session was something like Microsoft identity, you know, current, where they are currently, and future plans and stuff. And it was fairly entertaining. If you think that, if you like dry humor and you can understand Vittorio, I think he's a riot.
Yeah, he's certainly a character, that's for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. And the big thing that he talked about here was that he just was talking about where Microsoft is going, and he essentially said, you know, they're not done with the whole Azure AD authentication library, which we know as ADAL. That a V2 is actually, or V3 actually is being released or is coming out very shortly with that, with a bunch of updates. But what they did is they looked at all of the work that they had done. And they looked at the work that they had recently with ADAL, and they looked at the work that they had done recently with all of the convergence of taking both the Microsoft accounts and the social accounts and the Azure AD accounts. They looked at all the convergence stuff that they did, and they kind of looked at ADAL, and they said, you know, we really can't just make a couple tweaks to the API. We really need to go through and really take advantage of this and really build a new one. And so what they've done is they shipped a preview release, which – Vittorio was kind of funny. He said, we would have RTM'd it, but we couldn't decide on where we're going to put the samples. So hopefully if we can decide on where we put the samples, then we'll RTM it, but the library's done.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So essentially it's called the Microsoft Authentication Library, the MSAL. And he showed a demo of it. And man, if you've used ADAL, it's awesome about how easy it is. You write two lines to do authentication, and then it's just whatever the second object is, you just do, let's just say you call it foo, it would just be foo.token, and then you're off of the races. And the only data you have to pass into it is just the client ID that you're looking for, and then a array of strings that is just all the scopes which you're looking for the different permissions you're looking for, like say mail.read. So those are the only two things you pass in, and it figures everything else out for you. It looked so simple.
Nice.
So simple.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. So that's a lot of the Azure news that I saw. And I tried to flip this in our Flipboard, but a lot of these links here for some of the different news things, they're actually blocked from being put in Flipboard. So you won't find those in Flipboard, but they're if you go to the Azure blog, the Azure Service Update blog, a lot of these things I just mentioned are all listed there.
Yeah, nice. Hey, one that we didn't talk about that I noticed at Build, what people were talking about, were extensions for Microsoft Edge, which is their browser. And so apparently in a new build, in the new Insider build, 14.291, which is a Windows 10 build, sort of a preview build, they've opened up these extensions for Edge. And so there were some talks at Build, I believe. I didn't go along to any, but I think I saw some on the card or on the docket talking about how to go build these things. And they're basically or essentially like web applications with a shim between the browser and your app to go do different things. So much like a Chrome extension, but for Microsoft Edge. So that's a sort of a new thing that devs could go take a look at and see if they want to go build their extensions for Edge. There's a bunch already there, apparently, but Microsoft are saying, you know, that they've got extensions coming for like AdBlock and Amazon, LastPass, Evernote, and all that sort of stuff. So it'll be nice. It'll make that browser a little more functional, that's for sure.
Interesting. Interesting. That's very cool. Yeah. I wonder if those extensions are supposed to work with Chrome too. Is that correct?
I think they're saying it's super easy to port between Chrome and Edge with very little effort or something like that.
Yeah. I remember when they first announced Edge, what last year's build, I know that was one of the things. I thought there was something about like it'll even be able to consume Chrome-based extensions too. So yeah, I'm sure there's been some changes to over the last year, but yeah, I mean, extensions are, being able to have extensions in the browser is incredibly useful. I know I use it a ton in Chrome, so it's very nice to see that we got that.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of, stuff around the browser. And then obviously, we jump into sort of the Win 10, you know, that sort of leads into all of the Win 10 announcements and things like that. And the big one there was the anniversary update, like we mentioned in our first recap show. If you didn't catch that, Microsoft coming out with a thing they call the Windows 10 anniversary update that's coming this summer with more ink support. Something that they really showcased in the keynote. And they were talking, there's a bunch of improvements there in that. But then there was other Windows improvements, like the Bash shell coming to Windows, which is huge. Go get that from the Windows Store. I believe you can start doing that today.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize you could do that today.
I haven't given that a shot just yet, but I'm definitely going to try it out. I think you go buy it or install it from the Windows Store, and it downloads all the right things to your machine and gets you going, which obviously for sort of our world was probably the biggest news. I think it made the most waves, because Microsoft are collaborating with Ubuntu or Canonical, who make Ubuntu, and that seemed to be the one that shocked everybody. I think the news leaked the day before or something like that, but yeah, that certainly made a lot of headlines. So I need to go try that out and see exactly how good it is and how what they mean by Bash on Windows.
Yeah, definitely.
The wrapping up the Windows news, I think, you know, a theme for the show was apps everywhere for me, and it was universal Windows apps running on Windows and HoloLens and phones and Xbox and Surface Hubs and all that. And there was a ton of content dedicated at the show about these, you know, this universal app platform. And so Microsoft are all in on trying to get developers, you know, building an app and putting it everywhere and using that as a real draw card, because, you know, they can add up all of the numbers of users across all those different platforms and say to developers, you go target those guys and you're good. So it'll be interesting to see if this pays off. You know, a bunch of these places, I don't think developers are all that interested in putting apps on, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily make sense that I'd go build a an expense app and then deploy it onto my Xbox, but or maybe it does. You never know. But there are some really interesting scenarios where it makes a lot of sense, especially in the gaming space or casual gaming space and things like that, in the consumer space that makes sense. So we'll see how it pans out for them. But that was definitely a big theme of the conference.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It's I'd be curious to see how much adoption there is there. I mean, it's a good story to have. It's going to be interesting to see how people adopt that and how many people actually jump on board with that. I know that it was talked about a little bit at the last year's build. I don't personally know anybody that's building any of the universal Windows apps, and that's not a comment or anything about it. I don't know anything about it, but I'm curious, like, what if anybody, like, the people that are building those, like, what do they think? Like, what's the experience is like and stuff. So
yeah,
it's just not something it's not something I do on a day-to-day basis. I'm just curious.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
I saw a few Office 365 and Office related news too. Just grab a couple of these here. I saw that there actually were a significant number of updates to the Outlook REST APIs for those of you who are doing any dev on that. So I saw the Outlook Task API. So if you want to be able to work with tasks inside of Outlook, that's now available. You can also get to your out of office configuration and settings through the REST APIs. And then they also made, what they're saying are a lot of updates to the Outlook OAuth sandbox, which is a bunch of samples, making it a lot easier to do things with their different REST APIs. So for example, in the past, when you wanted to like find an email and reply to it or forward it, in the past, it used to take like 3 round trips. I'd never done this. I'm not really sure what they mean by what was involved in 3 round trips, what you had to do. But they said they've been able to bring that down to just 1 round trip instead of to do 3 round trips. So that's obviously a performance improvement. And another big update that they had, which I jumped into the live dev show that Sonia Koptev runs, that they held on a Friday, I believe, and posted the question and tried to get a little bit of insight into it. And it was about add-ins for the Office clients. And, you know, we've seen in the past where at the last build, it was a big deal about talking about Office add-ins and building an add-in that would run in the web clients and the Windows clients, and also in the other cross-platform clients. And the story was always, you know, that they're working on adding it, getting full parity to like iOS and Android and OS X Office clients. And the Office clients have had the ability, or at least on Windows, they've got full parity with web. But then when you go to the Mac, we've had read add-ins for Outlook,
yeah,
but not in the other places. And then they said there was an announcement this past week at Build, was that, you know, they're now announcing support for Office add-ins for the Mac. And I was like, well, now wait a minute, you already kind of have some support. So what does that mean? And they said that what that means is that's covering Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And then we'll also look to see to have Compose add-ins for Outlook. And all of that's supposed to be coming in the next, like partially now and then partially next in the next 3 to 6 months. So I was a little confused by that. And hopefully that clears up a little bit to where we should be seeing full add-in support for OS X. We should see that in the next 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, no, that was definitely good to see some progress there. But yeah, it's still a little spotty, right? Like the coverage is, like you say, is still a bit hit and miss. But they seem to be plugging away at it. It's just taking a lot longer than I think everybody would like. So, the big ones there were Word, Excel, and PowerPoint on a Mac, and add-in support for that, better support in Outlook, and more API coverage across various other endpoints like the Excel JavaScript API and the Word Online API as well. There was a hidden gem in this announcement that I really didn't look at all that much at the time, but around deployment management of these things. So in the past, you know, people had to go to the store button in Word, for example, and go in and install a add-in from the store. And it kind of sucked for administrative deployment. But they're coming out with a new deployment management tool that you do from the admin center in Office 365 that will let an administrator install and get an add-in and then push it out to a set of users. So it's sort of more centralized deployment of add-ins. This was always the case with Exchange. So with the Outlook add-ins, administrators could do this. But it wasn't the case for Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Certainly not as easily as for Outlook anyway. And so they're centralizing this deployment management in the admin center. And so admins will be able to go through and push these things out. So that was a pretty sweet improvement, and one that's, I think, very much needed for sort of enterprise adoption of these things. So that for me was a nice little hidden gem in the announcement.
Yeah, I agree. That was one that I agree with you. It was definitely a hidden one, and it wasn't one that we got a lot of visibility to it, but it's definitely a very big one. Going back to what you were talking about the add-ins and the support across, you know, the entire stack and then across all the different platforms, I think that, you know, I think it might have been a little bit of the news that when Microsoft announced this and really talked a lot about it at Build last year and then the immediate conference right after Build at Ignite, the impression I think that we all kind of walked away was that we would be seeing add-ins cross-platform across all the different across the Office stack, at least by the end of the calendar year last year, but full parity across the bit. And I think that it's been a bit disappointing. I know I put a blog post out a couple of weeks ago, kind of laying into them, just saying, you know, you gotta follow through on your commitments and, you know, I get that there's, you know, internal politics and there's internal resource allocation and stuff, but I don't know, from my point and from what I've heard from other people, I've been getting really frustrated at, you know, you hear from Office that they're doing this stuff and it's been, but over a year now when you've got, you know, almost the entire .NET platform has been rewritten for open source and .NET Core in just, you know, 1 to 2 short years. And we're still waiting on just one part of this thing to happen across the different suites. I know there's different complications and stuff, but it's nice to see we got a little bit of news from it. And I'd like to just kind of see, I think that, you know, everyone's hoping that they do this. And there's a ton of people that are on that love the new Office client on Mac. And just, we'd love to be able to use those add-ins as well. It's just I can see it definitely would be an easier story to convince people to build and sell add-ins in the store when you know that they're going to be on the devices that everyone's using, like iOS and Android and Windows. And, you know, I know that there's a smaller population on OS X, but still there's a pretty sizable population. So
definitely. One of the other things in here was that OneNote is supporting add-ins now as well in their preview. So, which I was really surprised that they didn't really like triple down on this in the keynote, because, you know, note taking is a pretty core scenario, and there's a lot of, you know, swirl going on around OneNote versus Evernote and what's happening with OneNote and note taking on iPads and all that sort of stuff. So I was kind of surprised they didn't really push hard on this one. But yeah, OneNote add-ins coming in preview, which will mean partners will be able to go build add-ins and extend OneNote online and things like that, which will be, that'd be really nice.
I agree, too. That's a really big addition, being able to do add-ins inside of OneNote. I mean, OneNote's one of the little hidden gems of Office. You find that, you know, a lot of people that use it absolutely love it. I know I'm in the process, the very slow process of converting, going from Evernote back to OneNote right now. I've done it for a bunch of my notebooks, and I've got just this one massive one that I'm now having to kind of piecemeal out because the tools that we have to do the migrations don't work exactly the way that I need them to. And so I'm having to kind of figure out a workflow that works for me, but it's nice that that we're definitely moving in that direction to seeing the extensibility option that we have inside of OneNote and having the different, you know, APIs that we can do to actually work with notebooks as well. So, definitely good bid there. I'm surprised. I was surprised we didn't see more about that, or at least see a mention of that in the keynote.
Yeah. And again, but back to your story about spottiness, it's coming in OneNote Online first in preview and then followed by OneNote for Windows later in the year, which goodness knows when that means. But, you know, you're only going to see this pop up online, and it's going to be only on Windows and not on Mac for a while yet. So again, there's that supportability matrix creeping back in there to ruin your day.
Yeah. No kidding. Hey, maybe a little bit of Xamarin love will be able to help them with all this stuff. We'll see.
Yeah, an additional thing along with the OneNote stuff was in Outlook. They've got this new extensibility called Outlook Module Extensibility. Which means you can put an entire app basically in Outlook. So not an add-in sort of with a pane inside a mail, but like they call these things modules. And so you can add like an entire application to and surface it within Outlook, which, you know, I don't know if you've done Outlook development before in the past, but a lot of people did this and they wanted to surface like some sort of line of business system right within Outlook, you know, right alongside mail, calendar, you know, contacts and, you know, like line of business app. So I think this is pretty this is pretty interesting because it means you'll be able to embed your, not just pieces of your application, but an entire application, a web-based app, much like the add-ins are built today, right inside Outlook, with sort of more screen real estate and its own ribbon and all that sort of stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. So to visualize that, I mean, I didn't see a ton of information on that this week. I'm still kind of looking for the session where it was talked a lot more about, because it definitely is a huge capability that you can use to extend Outlook. Like you said, I mean, think about CRM or ticketing or, you know, help desk type stuff. I mean, the add-ins are great inside of Outlook, but, you know, mail is such a core thing, and communication and collaboration with people is such a core thing that Outlook is up for everybody all the time. And being able to have this is a big deal. So to visualize it, for those of you that haven't seen this, if you go into like one of the current or the more recent Outlook clients, where I guess Outlook 2013 or 2016, in the bottom left corner where you see mail, calendar, people, imagine it would say something like Foo or Acme at the bottom of it, where you can actually see another piece and then the whole screen kind of takes over. So it's not just up in the ribbon.
Yeah, exactly. I think this will be pretty interesting to watch, because all of the CRM vendors like Salesforce and Insightly and all that sort of stuff, I bet they go add this to Outlook, because this is one of the big kind of things that they used to do with com add-ins in Outlook. And so I think they're going to go do the same with the new web add-in system.
Yeah, but even those, like the different marketing companies that are out there, like the Drips and the Infusionsoft and, what is it, MailChimp, or AWeber, those guys would make a lot of sense to have something like that embedded right inside Outlook as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a couple of updates too that they webhooks was a big deal as well.
Oh, yeah.
Where webhooks for, Microsoft Graph, for a lot of the Outlook data. So those were in preview. I know those are, be able to see now when you get notified when certain things happen inside of somebody's mailbox, that you can actually get notified of that, and you can actually run your own custom code. And surprise to me too is that OneDrive actually added webhooks as well, so that, you know, when you see changes to different files happening inside of OneDrive, you can register your app to be notified, so that Microsoft will make a call out to your endpoint to let you know when something was changed or when something was added or deleted, then you can perform some sort of action on that information. So I know that's definitely a big benefit as well.
Yep, no, webhooks are a must-have, right? I've been using them with the Exchange stuff for a little while, and it's nice to see them come to the Microsoft Graph. And yeah, I was surprised by the OneDrive hooks, but that's really cool too. Another one that, now the coolest API enhancement in the Microsoft Graph that I think is really interesting is the Excel REST API, which let you read and modify data inside a spreadsheet or inside a workbook without having to download the whole workbook. And so, for example, this means you could be running a survey online or something and then use the API to insert a result into a Excel spreadsheet or something along those lines. And Google Docs with Sheets have had this for quite a while, and it really kicks ass for scenarios like with IFT and with Zapier for doing, you know, collecting data from different sources and then jamming it all in an Excel doc, which I think is really nice. There's a lot of scenarios there that make sense, and I'm looking forward to trying that out.
Yeah, agreed. That's they've done a really good job with that. I remember hearing some Rob Howard on the Office 365 Dev Show talk a lot about that when he was saying how the way that they had built stuff with Excel was that they kind of have a core library, and being able that they use both inside the Outlook add-in and the Excel add-in, to where you can actually use their API, the JavaScript API, to interact with the spreadsheet. But the way they had done it was going to make it really easy for them to not only have that same interaction both in an Excel web, Excel Windows, Excel OS X, but also now being able to have a REST, Excel REST API that you could interact with spreadsheets and not have to go straight to like the Excel app or something like that to do those things. So that's a huge, huge benefit too. And nice compete too with the Google Sheets stuff as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So do you see any other news that you want to share? Or I think I'm about tapped out here. I don't think I have anything else in my notes here.
Yeah, there's one more that I think we should mention, not necessarily build related per se, but there was a really interesting article that came out during build, or very close to the end of build, which is that Microsoft has snagged Oracle's main man on Linux.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there's this chap called Wim. His name is Wim. His first name is Wim, at least, W-I-M. And his last name is, oh gosh, I'm going to completely mess this up. Anyway.
Good try.
Kokiat, something like that. He's been at Oracle for a long time. And he's been pivotal in making them, you know, a real power in the Linux world. And he's moved to Microsoft, so he's now a corporate vice president at Microsoft. And this is pretty interesting move. You know, like, we've seen a few things from Microsoft in terms of embracing Linux, but I think what this means is that there's really going to be somebody steering that effort sort of all up across the company and getting really serious about it. So I suspect we'll hear more news about Linux and Microsoft over the coming years. Apparently, it's no longer a cancer.
Yeah.
Barmer used to, you know, called it like an Linux and open source to a cancer. And, you know, the background behind Steve Ballmer's quote was the way licensing worked with it and things like that, or at least that's what he was claiming to use as evidence to that. But anywho, Microsoft seemed to be becoming a lot more comfortable with Linux and the open source world in general. So they seem to have cured that cancer and moved on.
Yeah, this is a really big deal. It may not seem like as much of a deal, but just think about what the implications are with this. I mean, the guy that ran, Oracle runs on Linux, it runs on Windows, but most of the core workloads where people are using Oracle, they're running it on top of a Linux stack. They're not running it on top of Windows in an environment. And to see the guy that has owned the Linux story for Oracle shift over to Microsoft, not only does that make a really big statement about, you know, first what he's been told and where Microsoft wants to go with this, but because obviously Microsoft had to make some, you know, to convince him that this was a good move for him. But look at what that Microsoft is doing here and how much of a stance, how much of a big deal that they're saying that, you know, Linux is important to the future of Microsoft. And we've heard it reported multiple times that over a quarter of the virtual machines in Azure are actually running Linux. And we've seen the news about, you know, Microsoft making sure that the .NET framework, as far as .NET Core and ASP.NET Core, are going to be running, have ability to run on top of Linux. And then the latest news that we saw about SQL Server is going to run on top of Linux. I mean, this is just, it's Linux and Windows. It's not just a Windows company anymore. It is Microsoft is fully embracing Linux. That's a really big deal. And that's a good thing for a lot of organizations.
Oh yeah. Yep. Absolutely. He was a big deal at Oracle and on his LinkedIn profile and just in his last role as Senior Vice President, Linux and Virtualization Engineering, he said responsible for engineering support, QA and product management of the following: Oracle VM, x86, Spark, VirtualBox, and Manager, Linux containers, Docker, OpenStack, Secure Global Desktop, Oracle Linux, Unbreakable Enterprise Kernel, Linux for Spark, CloudNet SDN Project, Private Cloud Appliances, and a bunch of others.
Jeez.
So pretty much all of it. And and he's been there since 1995. So this is a big coup for Microsoft taking away their Oracle one of the bigwigs from Oracle.
Yeah, that's really impressive, man. That's quite an impressive move by them. So, hats off to Microsoft on that one. I love seeing the move, and really looking forward to seeing more Linux goodness coming from Microsoft over the next few months, next years.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. So yeah, that seems like that was a bit of news not related to Build per se, but kind of in the mix there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, I got, we run through a bunch of news here, and, I think that, you know, we've gone through a lot of, like, detailed stuff here, just kind of reporting the news here, but I'm curious to get your take. I know you it sounds like you gave us a little bit of it on what your perception was being there, but why don't you tell me a little bit about, you know, what was your big takeaways from Build this year? I mean, what, you know, not only just being at the conference, but, you know, what was the vibe that you saw? What was the walkaway you had from it?
Mm.
What was your take? I'm just curious to hear what you think about it. I had some from afar, but you were there.
Yeah. So I think one of the things, not so much about the news, but about the event itself that really struck me was, and maybe I'm getting this because, I used to work in the office team that participated in Build, was that this time at Build, it felt like they were really making a concerted effort to be one Microsoft. And by that, I mean not having individual product groups or divisions doing their own thing. So at previous builds, for example, and like at last year's build when I was still on the team, we had a big, big office area downstairs in the Moscone West Center. And then upstairs, there were different divisions, had different areas, like Windows had some stuff and Azure had some stuff and things like that. But they were all quite separate. And this year, everybody was all together in one area in the expo floor, along with partners as well. So there are pros and cons of that. But I think, you know, one of the things I think was the biggest con that came out of that was that it just seemed like less investment from the product teams at Build. And possibly because they were trying, like possibly because it was trying to be centrally managed to bring everybody together as one unit, all in the expo area. So for example, the office team had a really small kind of area in the main expo, whereas last year we had this enormous area downstairs. But this, it wasn't just the office team, it was the same for everybody. And it just didn't seem like there was as much investment from each of the individual teams because of that, which I think on the one hand was really great that they were all together and doing their thing. But on the flip side, it just didn't feel like as good an event because of it to me. Different teams, you know, trying to upstage each other with better swag and more interesting things to do. And it just didn't seem as vibrant. But the expo area actually worked reasonably well from a partner perspective. I walked around and saw a lot of really interesting partners and talked to Docker and Mesosphere and all those guys. And it worked great from their perspective because they were right in there with the Microsoft guys. Whereas in the past years, they've been sort of separated off. So there are definitely some pros of it. But overall, I felt like it was just a bit of a step backwards in terms of level of investment from product teams.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it definitely seemed that came through a little bit from the remote kind of viewing experience too, where you did see, you know, the keynotes we had. You had the Windows section, you had the Office section, you had the Azure section as part of the keynotes. Those, the two keynotes, I think those were the three big areas that really kind of stood out. But it, you didn't really get a really strong vibe from any of the particular groups there. So it's interesting to hear you say that because it kind of makes a little more sense, or it adds a little more clarity into kind of what we saw from a remote viewing experience.
Yeah, I mean, I know what they were trying to aim at. I'm just not sure if it came off exactly as well as they had expected. I know they're really trying to not have separate divisions sort of warring against each other. So from that perspective, I think it probably worked for them. But from an attendee, it just didn't feel as big and as vibrant because they were all in one spot in the expo floor and not sort of spread out around the conference center. And they definitely didn't have as much space each, which I really think impacted things.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I think when we kind of look back at both the keynotes, I think that there was a few things that really stood out. I guess from a high level, I've only been to one Build conference, and before that, I went to one PDC many, many years ago. But I mean, I've always tuned in, watched very closely what's going on, and it might be a bad perception or maybe an unfair perception, but to me, it seemed like this year that there was it didn't seem like there was a lot of really pronounced like moves that Microsoft had made that they were sharing at Build. It didn't seem like, I'm not saying that, you know, we're trying to measure up and, you know, let's count the number of announcements and new things that were kind of announced at this, but it just kind of seemed like a little bit of a, I expected more.
Yeah. There wasn't something that just really popped as like the one thing, right? Or, you know, the one or two things, right?
Yeah. There was two parts to this. There was one, and I'll lead into this too with my next comment, was that one or two things that really popped that was announced there, but I didn't feel like there was a big milestone about this build. It just kind of felt like it was just happened to be last week. It didn't feel like there was something about this. Like I walked into this build, or at least I kind of leading up to it, I really expected, and I'm really expected, and I'm actually quite floored that we didn't see. And I should just preface this too, that I don't live in this world. I don't spend a lot of time with this tech. So, you know, maybe this is more obvious to people who do, but I expected to see the .NET Core and the ASP.NET Core. I was kind of surprised that we didn't hear a date of them going live or being GA and being finished.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're not nearly as close, but it surprised me that it wasn't as popular, as big of a thing to me. So just that was a little surprising to me.
Yeah.
So that was one. But the other thing, too, is that that really got me was that with something that was a big deal at the last Build conference, they talked a lot about containers. I talked a lot about Windows containers and I'm doing development with containers and from Visual Studio and stuff. And they did that in the keynote. I was flat out floored at the lack of coverage that had at this year's build, with the technology being even growing in adoption, not just in the greater like tech community, but also in the Microsoft community. I was surprised that we didn't see anything about Windows Server 2016 and Windows containers. And I was really surprised too that there wasn't more talk about Docker. I mean, even the Docker post, the blog post that came out from Docker this past week that highlighted Docker at build, it only talked about three different sessions. None of those sessions had the word Docker or container in the session title. And if I'm not mistaken, they didn't have anything either in the actual description of it. I mean, the only thing that I saw that was really prevalent about containers was Ross Gardler's session that you went to, which great session. I watched the video of it to last night on the way out to Vegas, about Azure Container Service. And that really surprised me.
Yeah, no, very surprising. I'm only assuming that was due to everything being about, you know, the Universal Window app platform and really trying to focus on that. So, I mean, the other couple of things I noticed as takeaways with that, back to that app everywhere thing that I just mentioned, HoloLens was huge, and bots, bots, bots. And maybe that's what they chose to focus on instead of some other things. So, yeah. Bit of a shame.
This bot thing will be interesting. I mean, I'm not. It's not something that I live in that space. I don't know anybody that in that world that's building stuff like that. But it, I guess, off the cuff, I kind of looked at it and was like, feels a lot like tail wagging the dog. If I'm being told that I should, that this should be important to me, and that I should care about this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I look at the bot stuff, and it just seems like the computer version of automated, like, you know, dial-in systems where you're like trying to go through a customer service thing to get, you know, file a support ticket, and you're just pushing the numbers of push this, or talk to someone.
Yeah.
I just felt like, you know, this is the Skype version of doing the exact same thing. So I'm not trying to minimize it, but it was weird how heavily indexed it was.
Yeah, I agree. Not sure how that happened, but I guess, yeah, we'll see next year.
Definitely.
Cool. So yeah, I think those were my takeaways.
Awesome. Well, hey, definitely a good week. Definitely not minimizing everything, but, very interesting week. A lot of good stuff came out of build last week. And so now we got a lot of people I know that you and I would like to chase down and get talk to, do some interviews on some things that were announced this past week and kind of follow up on. So
yeah, it gives us a lot to go forward with. And as we see these things come out and develop, it'll be interesting to keep up with them. And we'll no doubt revisit a bunch of these on the show. But we've got some good episodes ahead.
Absolutely. Hey, and there were two other. We should mention two other bits of news here that are people that are pretty big in the community that we know that we're close to and stuff that are related to Office and Office 365 and SharePoint. Two pretty big moves that just happened this past week. I'm sure you watched both of them. I know one of them that I think is going to surprise a lot of people was a guy by the name of Dan Holm, which I'm sure that a lot of people are familiar with, a very, very prevalent IT pro in the SharePoint space over the last, oh gosh, decade or so. Dan has joined Microsoft as the, I believe it's the director of marketing for SharePoint, I think is what his title is. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Director of product marketing.
Director of product marketing. Yeah. So that's a pretty big deal. Dan joining Microsoft there. So you know that Dan's in really good company there. And a good friend of ours, you want to share this news too?
Yeah. Oh, just a little bit on Dan. So Dan will be running the team that I used to be on years and years ago, actually, before I left Microsoft, along with with other colleagues, people might know, Mark Cashman, Bill Bayer, Chris McNulty, and those guys. So it's definitely in great company, and I'm excited about him joining Microsoft. He's such a great guy and really nice guy, and will do a lot for that product. So I wish him all the best of luck there, and hope he has a great time doing it.
Yeah, that's a big addition to Office. You want to talk about the opposite?
Yes. So the good news, yeah, the good news is Dan is going to SharePoint land. The sad news, or I guess it's, you know, a little bit sad, is that Jeremy Thaker's leaving the team. So he was on my old team at Microsoft, working on the developer ecosystem team, and he's actually moving to the Azure team. So he's going to be focusing on all of Azure's platform as a service offerings. And you know, it's a huge loss to the SharePoint and Office community, but it's something new and exciting for him. So I'm absolutely jazzed for him too.
Yeah, I think it's a good and a bad thing, right? It's a bad thing because that's a big loss to Office. it's a good thing because that's a huge win for Azure. So I think it's a great move for Jeremy. I'm really happy for him. He's joining a great team in a great spot for the product. And it's, you know, he's a dev at heart, and I'm really curious to see the stuff where he goes with this. And so it definitely is, I think he's working with the app service stuff. So that's the whole, like the web apps and the logic apps and the API apps. And I believe at the Azure, the functions is also something else that's going to be in his wheelhouse too. So that'll be really interesting to see. It's I have no idea what's going on with what's going to happen with the future of his podcast. It looks like the Office 365 developer podcast. I'm not sure if Richard's taking it over or how that goes, but
yeah, I hope somebody picks it up.
Yeah. Congratulations to both Jeremy and Dan on their moves. Those are big moves and great things, and change. I'm a firm believer change is good. So
yeah. Oh, and by the time this podcast comes out, we may have more news to share on other people leaving the team. So we will tune back in on that. I don't want to pop the news too early just in case they don't announce, but there are moves in the team and changes afoot. So maybe we'll talk about that next week.
Absolutely. Yeah. Always see this stuff at the end of a fiscal year, and you always see it after the end of at the end of a big milestone, like a conference like Build, and seeing people kind of changing roles and moving around. But
exactly. Musical chairs.
Yeah. Wait to see them go public with stuff before we go through and talk about it.
Exactly. I don't want to preempt that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey man, another good episode, and hope everybody got a lot out of this. We will see everybody next week.
Yeah, enjoy your conference in Vegas.
Thanks a lot, man. I will talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.